This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Yes, good afternoon. Pete Dillon here with you. 1:05 on a Saturday afternoon, and that can only mean one thing. It's time to talk food. It's time to talk booze. And today I'm joined by a very special guest here in the studio. He is one of the final four from MasterChef. His name is Elvin Kwar, and he's with me now. Good afternoon.
Hi, Pete. How are you doing?
I'm very excited to have you here in the studio with me.
Thank you for having me.
It's all going to be good fun. Elvin's with me for the next hour. Stick with us. We're also going to meet a fantastic winemaker who has left the confines of paid work, and now, well, he's, I guess you can say, gone out on his own with an interesting little range of wine. We're going to talk to him. I need to clarify that he is, in fact, my business partner's husband. Not that that will have any bearing whatsoever. So pop the cork off the top of something nice. Put your feet up on a poof. It is a beautiful Saturday afternoon here in Melbourne. It is winter, of course, so let's not complain about weather. As we do every week, let's kick off with some cutie news. Oh, some what? Some foodie news. Don't be surprised to see more luxury restaurants both in Melbourne and eventually in our northern neighbour state of Sydney. According to backer Frank Van Handel, the runaway success of the second Ladro in Prahran has not only given the original a boost, but confirmed the partner's belief that more of the same thing would be a good thing. You can never have too much pizza. It's way too early to speculate, but we'd suggest a Camberwell branch is on the shopping list and that Sydney will ultimately get one too. Elvin, that'll make you happy because let me tell you, they're sensational pizzas, and I know that Sydney's your home. So
I love pizzas.
Have you tried Ladro here in Melbourne?
No, I haven't.
There's several of them. You should. Albert, Adria, Dan Barber, Tom Akins, and now Dan Hunter. Yes, our very own Dan Hunter from the tiny town of Dunkeld in Western Victoria, where he is the chef at the Royal Mail for his boss, multimillionaire QC Alan Myers, is about to be in the company of luminaries next month. He's the only Australian presenting at the 2010 International Chefs Congress, put on by starchefs.com in nowhere else but New York City, along with Madrid Fusion, which is held each January, and where we had, I can't remember who was there for us this year. This one is one of the biggest and most high-profile pro chef congresses for the hot shots of the profession. So good on you, Dan Hunter. He is a good mate of ours. Reckon an ideal restaurant is one with waiter interaction kept to a minimum? Have we got a place for you? China Red, from the same Shanghai-based business that brought Melbourne its two brilliantly successful Hutong restaurants, has just opened in Bourke Street Mall, Melbourne, with a touchscreen menu and a wine list. Look, scroll, order, et voila. You want a bill? Just hit the screen again. It's a superbly efficient idea, and the food is apparently excellent. Instead of dumplings, the focus here is hand-pulled noodles, although the famous Xiaolongbao dumplings are there as well. What are Xiaolongbao dumplings? I'm going to get you to help me with that one.
Oh, they're dumplings with like sort of soup in them. So when you actually open them up, like this hot soup that comes through, it's really nice.
Oh, yum.
It's good for winter.
Yes, it is good for winter. Now, we spoke with... I don't know who we spoke with last week, but they were telling us about the potential for Iron Chef Australia. It is the local answer to international stadium cooking on steroids phenomenon. Producer Shine, the company behind MasterChef, is casting its net wide and approaching a slew of renowned chefs and local food media identities in a pretty tight time frame. The series will be filmed here in Melbourne next month, and the format will be faithful to the Japanese, British and American versions, with chefs competing in a kitchen arena, judged by a panel of three. Interesting, I reckon Paul Wilson from the Albert Park might just be up there for a go. Gordon Ramsay keeps copying it, and not in a good way. The blows keep coming for him with the news that Mays in Cape Town has closed after just 15 months. Restaurant owner, one and only Cape Town, gave no reasons for the decision but announced it was terminating the volatile chef's role as a consultant to the restaurant and ceasing to trade under the Mays banner. We were hoping to have later in the hour Josh Emmett, who is in fact the chef at Mays here in Melbourne, but we'll see if that comes to fruition. The move comes a year after Mays in Prague was forced to shut its doors as well. Gordon Ramsay Holdings says other Mays restaurants in Britain and around the world were doing well and that Melbourne's Mays was exceeding expectations. There's been another sharp fall in the value and volume of the Murray Valley's wine grape crop. The latest Department of Primary Industries crush survey shows the farm gate value of grapes bought in the 2010 vintage dropped another 30% last year by $35 million to just $80 million. The survey also reveals a 13% fall in total Murray Valley wine grape production, down by 47,000 tonnes to 328,000. Revenues have fallen from about 200 million down to 80 million since 2005, and annual purchases by wineries are down 115,000 tonnes. That's a lot for a small area, and it should send a clear message to wineries that they need to make a move to restore some confidence. You could expect to be paying more for your bread and your beer because of the devastating wildfires and drought in Russia. World wheat prices have soared because Russia is one of the biggest exporters. It's had its crop ravaged and is now putting a halt to exports until just after Christmas. The move could benefit Australian wheat producers, but might also lead to a price hike for consumers. It's not good that beer is getting more expensive. The very gorgeous and very talented, and well, he's the number one chef in the world, Rene Redzepi. He's the world's hottest property, and he's just been announced as the big ticket draw card for the Crave Sydney International Food Festival. Are you on that ticket as well?
No, I'm not.
Oh, you should be.
I'm not a chef, and I'm not even hot.
Oh, come on. The organisers believe the clincher for the in-demand Dane, whose restaurant Noma was ranked number one in the world this year in the world's 50 best restaurants by San Pellegrino, was their offer of the venue. He's actually going to be cooking in the Sydney Opera House, which is designed, of course, by Dane Jørn Utzon. Redzepi will launch the month-long festival on October 1, talking about his food philosophy and spruiking his first major cookbook, Noma, Time and Place in Nordic Cuisine, to be released by Faden Press the same day. He won't be coming to Melbourne on this victory lap, but let me tell you, yours truly might be hoofing his ass to Sydney to see if I can score an interview with that very talented man, and then I can go out to have dinner with Elvin and his partner while I'm there. And sadly, the industry identity Vince Gangemi of the Geelong Base V&R Fruit and Vegetable Market passed away recently at the age of 82. He was an Italian immigrant, and he and his wife Rosa established their business 32 years ago, it seems. It's now one of the biggest in Geelong, and we send our sympathy to the family. And finally, in some odd news, as always, this could only happen in America. Reno police say a squid left cooking in a microwave is the suspected culprit of noxious fumes that left two apartment dwellers sick.
No.
Authorities in the Nevada city don't know if the squid was put in the microwave as a prank or as an act of cruelty when they found it in the house. They believe the squishy cephalopod was stuck in the microwave by burglars and left to cook in a communal kitchen. Two residents were taken ill by the fumes and were treated at a hospital. Police are apparently still investigating.
Only in America.
Only in America. And that is indeed the foodie news. I am sitting here in the... I can say that I'm sitting in the company of greatness.
Thank you.
Final four?
Final six,
final
actually.
Six. Yeah. Really?
But final four sounds good.
Final four sounds... So who was the final... Oh, what have I missed there? Sorry, Elvin. I was hoping you'd get to final two. I'd actually nearly put my house on it.
Oh, it's that, is that cake. That cake just did it for me.
Well, I spoke to Adriano Zumbo at the end of that week that when it was aired, and he said it was just a little crazy himself, so he admitted that. That voice you can hear is that of Elvin Kwai. It is 14 minutes past one. My name is Pete Dillon. This is Cravings 0427 Joy 949. If you would like to text in, you can email onair@joy.org.au, or you can indeed send me a tweet to Cravings_JOY949. Now, I'm here with the very lovely Elvin Kwai, who was final six in MasterChef. And I've got to, first of all, admit to you that from day one, I had three favourites in the competition. You're one of them from that very first episode
wow,
that was
thank
aired.
You.
And my family have chosen to remind me that the reason I probably had you as my favourite was because you remind me enormously of my former partner. So there you go.
Is that former in a good way?
Oh,
absolutely.
No, no, it was a very amicable and lovely split. He now lives in New York City. So
nice.
Yes, all good. So how was it?
It was quite an amazing experience. I think the skills that you learn, you know, the time that you spend, you know, the people that you meet, you just can't, it's irreplaceable. Like it's just so many highlights. I don't know where to start.
Did you make a new best friend in that house?
Well, I'm pretty close to Skye. Skye's pretty groovy. She's friends for life type thing. And I'm also friends with Marion, Adele, lovely people.
Excellent. Was there anyone you didn't get along with?
There are a few big personalities. I'll
there was a
that.
Lot of big personalities.
Yeah, but you know what? The funny thing is, I think everyone clashed at the beginning, like the first week, because there's 24 of us in the big house. But after
where
a while,
where was the house? Was it in Balmain?
No, it's in Darling Point.
Ah, right. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. And I think after a while, we all sort of decided, you know what? We have to live with each other, and let's just respect what we cook rather than who we are.
Mm. So you all had to cook for one another in that house as well.
Yeah, we do. Like when there were a bigger group, we sort of rostered, you know, dinner and cleaning up. But eventually it was just, look, I'm practicing this chicken dish. Why don't you try it? Look, this is pork that I've just tested. So it just becomes, you know, like we're just guinea pigs to their experiments, really.
So let's go back. We've talked now about the most recent, but let's go back probably quite a few years. You came to Australia when you were how old?
19.
What brought you over?
I came here to do my Bachelor's of Science degree in University of Melbourne.
Right.
Yeah, and then I did my Honours degree, and then I did my PhD.
And then I did perennial university.
It's a perennial university student, yeah. I didn't want to go out to the real world. So, and then I did research in motor neuron disease, and then I decided that doesn't research is a crime of passion, and you know, I'm driven by more wealth, I suppose. So I sort of sidestepped to the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah. Which is the industry where you do sell your soul for a buck.
Pretty much.
So let's talk about the influences. Your mother, I think, would say is your biggest influence when it comes to food?
Yeah, she's an awesome cook. And I remember as a kid, I used to just hover around in the kitchen, and if she would bake a cake, I'd be licking the bowl. And when I grew up a bit older, I wanted to learn stuff and she wouldn't let me. She just said, no, I'm fine. So I'll just stand by the side and just watch. And she's been quite an inspiration.
Did you ever consider making cooking your career early on?
Yes, I have actually, but I had some, let's just say, meddling relatives that sort of told me, don't do it.
Right. Was there pressure on you to go and do something that was going to be more lucrative?
Yeah, there was pressure on me to either be, a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer, really.
Oh, is that traditional? Because you're Malaysian, aren't you?
Yeah, it is traditional. And because my parents, God love them, they're happy for whatever I do. But I think it's the relatives that kept sort of telling me, don't do the cooking thing. It doesn't pay well. And what do you think you're doing? You want to be a cook? It's quite derogatory.
Mm, but if you have a look at the people like Gordon Ramsay and even Pete Evans and Manu Fidel, those guys, Gary and George,
that are
making a very handsome buck out of
cooking. Exactly.
Do you regret the decision, or do you think that MasterChef provided you with that opportunity to start exploring what you want to do with food?
I don't regret the decision at all. I think, given my, like I did my life in research and that's all done, and now I'm exploring a bit of, the culinary side, and I think MasterChef is a great platform.
So what prompted you to jump on the website and fill out that application form in the first place?
I think my major inspiration was Poe from last series. Mm. And I thought, wow, she's really good. And she inspired me to sort of join. And then one day when I was, bored at work, I looked at the online submission form and I thought, oh, this looks good. And it took me, I think I was so half-assed with my filling of the form. I'm actually surprised they called me back.
So you got called in and they said, yeah, we're keen to meet you.
Yeah, like apparently there were over 8,000 applicants. Mm, and then they called in to sort of, narrow it down to 50. And then I had to cook something for George and Gary on the spot to be put into the top 50.
Which was? What did you cook?
I made a deep fried snapper with homemade chili jam and pickled celery and mango salad.
Yum.
Yeah. Yum. Yeah, they liked it too.
Well, obviously, that's why you got into the top 50. So how was the relationship with those guys? Matt Preston is somebody I know very well and has been on this program numerous times. How supportive and how encouraging was that relationship with particularly Gary and George's chefs?
Yeah, I think they're very realistic. They keep telling you, look, it's hard work being in the hospitality industry. But Gary and George, they're such good mentors. I think they steer you in the right direction. And if they don't know where to go, they'll tell, they'll refer you to someone. Mm. And Matt Preston, I just adore.
Oh, isn't he lovely?
Yeah, I think all three of them, they're a perfect mix for the show.
Mm.
And they're a perfect sort of networking tool as well.
Mm. So top 50, did you jump up and down?
Top 50, I jumped up and down. I actually, I remember sort of taking some time off work. I thought, yeah, don't worry about it. I'll just be in top 50. I won't make it to top 24. So I was happy just to be in top 50. And then lo and behold, I got into top 24. And then...
And how did your employers deal with that? Did you just say, look, I've got to go?
No, my employers dealt with it really well. They just sort of said to me, fine, they support the work-life balance thing. They support the, let's explore the creative side. So they gave me a long leave of absence and they kept my job warm for me.
Well, that's nice. There's not many employers would do that. So top 24, What was the most difficult challenge you think you faced, whether it was a cooking challenge or whether it was just something personal that I know there was one episode where you were a little, because I'm an addict to MasterChef, as you know, a little teary, I guess. It was that looking back to your childhood.
Yeah. I think the most difficult part for me in the whole competition was when you start comparing to the other contestants. Mm. You compare yourself to the other contestants. I mean, the way I cook, I don't do the purees, I don't do the smears, I don't do the, you know, fancy schmancy type dishes, which, you know, I never profess to be able to do. And the rest of them, like even, you know, the 20-year-olds like Matthew and, you know, Callum, and like they're all smearing away and, you know, making ice creams out of everything. Mm. So it's quite... It's quite full on. It's quite overwhelming, and I got to a stage where, you know, I didn't think I was good enough. So, you know, the whole self esteem got a bit of a blow, and then one thing led to the other. So that was tough. So it's a battle of, you know, endurance and persistence as well as cooking.
You seem to be very well liked and well respected amongst all of the contestants, and that's, I don't know whether that's just damn good editing by Southern Star or Fremantle, sorry, or whether that's actually the case. Did you feel a really strong sense of a family, particularly when you sort of got to top 12?
Yeah,
and there was 12 of you left. And
I didn't think I rubbed anyone off the wrong way, pun the pun. I think I endear myself to people. I like to think that.
Well, is that because you're charming?
Maybe.
Now, I want to ask, and we can probably explore this a little more. Your partner. You live in Sydney?
Yes.
What part of town are you in?
I'm in the not-so-exciting part of town of North Ryde.
Okay. Were you allowed to see your partner whilst you're in the house?
No, we're only given sometimes like a few hours in a week. Mm. So usually it's a weekend, so it's usually 8 hours, and you just sort of spend time with the partner.
Okay.
And I actually feel sorry for the interstaters because they can't just drop everything and
fly home.
Yeah.
Mm. So I guess you had a little bit of an advantage in that respect.
Yeah, I think the local people, the Sydney-siders did have a slight advantage, but you can see it the other way as well. I think the more you see your partner, the more you feel, you know...
like you're missing them.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So it's better to go the long haul.
Now, do you like music?
Love music.
Do you like Alcazar? Do you like a bop around to something a little bit camp?
Who doesn't?
Okay, this is Elvin, who's with me. Elvin Kwar, he is obviously number in the top six from MasterChef 2010. He's with me for the hour. We're going to explore a whole bunch of things about food, and we're going to talk about cinnamon pigs. And I have with me Elvin Kwar from MasterChef, who is here in Melbourne. He's been doing a bit of work. You might have seen him yesterday on The Circle. He was making that gorgeous eggplant sambal. And he's with me till pretty much the end of the show. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
Or I shouldn't say welcome back. We didn't go anywhere. 0427 Joy 949 is the text. 1300 Joy 949 if you would like to ring and, well, say something. On air at joy.org.au, or you can indeed send a tweet to cravings_JOY949. So before we had heard that little track from Alcazar, which in fact was called The World We Live In, I heard a bit of Blondie in there.
Pretty cool.
Or something. Yeah, cool, it was track. Pretty cool. It was a nice little boppy number. We were having a bop here in the studio. It's a shame there's no wine. Normally I would like to offer my guests a glass of wine.
Yeah, on a Saturday afternoon.
I'm not really allowed to have it near the desk because I'm a bit... they know I'm clumsy and they know that I'll spill it and it'll break something, and they're very expensive things to fix. So we're talking about before your partner and how you sort of dealt with... Well, we didn't delve into this, but how did you deal with being away from him for so long?
Oh, it was really difficult, actually. I think we're allowed phone calls, so get to speak to him, so that's fine. But I think towards the end, it was easier for him because he got to see me on TV, whereas I didn't. So what I did, I did a lot of things to sort of placate myself. So there's pictures of him all over, you know, my room in the MasterChef house, and like I talk to him fairly regularly, and I just keep reminding myself, you know, like I'm doing this for a reason, and at the end of it there's someone waiting for me, so it's a bit sweet.
Nice. That's very sweet. Very sweet indeed. So how's he coping now with your, and this is probably a silly question, but how's he coping with your fame?
I think it's a little bit he's a little overwhelmed by it all as well, because you can't have dinner and not be intruded by someone who wants an autograph, wants to take a photo, and you have to be nice to them. And so I think initially,
I don't even have a camera in here. What am I thinking? Although I've got photos.
That wasn't a hint. That wasn't a hint.
I've got photos with Farron Alger and Heston Blumenthal. So. I'm skiting like, as you were. So you feel those intrusions when you're out in public?
Yeah, but, you know, like a lot of the they're pleasant intrusions. Don't get me wrong. It's just I think for him, he feels like he has to share me with the rest of the world, or Australia, as the case may be. So he gets a little bit snippy sometimes.
And of course, because of your interest in food, I'm assuming he has an interest in food as well.
Yeah, he does. He's more of a plater upper. So I usually do the cooking, and I can't plate up to, you know, save myself, as
with,
you've
with
seen.
With his splotches and things.
Yeah, and so he does, because he used to work in the hospitality industry. He used to manage cafes. He used to be a waiter for a silver service, you know, so he knows what looks good. And he's actually, I think we're a good team, because I cook and I say, here, dress this.
Maybe he should register for Come Dine With Me Australia.
Yeah,
then you can have two minor celebrities in the house.
That's a good idea.
See, it's that invasion of privacy. That invasion of privacy, I think, would be something that would do.
Let's welcome some more people.
Who can harass you in the street. Have you encountered any homophobia? Like, have you people yell nasty things out the windows of cars? Because
no.
North Ryde's not exactly the hotbed of the gay ghetto.
No, strangely enough, I didn't. And I'm actually glad about this, because when I joined the show, I wanted people to know my cooking first, my personality second, and then, you know, the gay thing sort of comes with that. And I've had so many people coming up to me and say, you know, you've done a good job and well done. And, you know, like they span from, you know, the kids to the really, really, really straight male. So I think it's great.
Well, it's also about getting rid of that myth. And the myths that have been perpetuated on television and the representation of gay people on TV has always been either highly camp. No, even things like Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Highly camp. We're all supposed to be wealthy, fussy, materialistic, and that's not the case with the majority of the community. So I think any sort of representation of our collective sexuality on television has to be good.
I agree, and I think it's I think Fremantle, or the post-editing sort of, you know, portrayed us all really well. Like, it's about the food, not so much about who we are and who we sleep with.
It's about what got you to this point as well, and about that interest to put food on a plate.
Yeah.
Courtney's sexuality revealed a bit later in the show.
Yes.
Did you know?
You know, the funny thing is, we were, I think, second week into Top 50.
Yeah.
And I just found out towards the end of Top 50, I thought, whoa. So that's a pleasant surprise as well.
See, I wasn't surprised. I went, yeah. That's obvious.
Really?
Yeah.
I was surprised, because I think she's a, you know.
Not that lesbians aren't good-looking women.
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. Oh, my goodness. I did not say that.
Yes, I know you didn't say it. I'm putting words in your mouth. The mouth is, of course, that of Elvin Kwa from 2010's MasterChef Final 6. And he is with me for the rest of the program. Very soon we'll be joined by Glenn James, who is from Ducks in a Row Winemakers, a new venture out of South Australia. We're going to be using some Victorian grapes and creating some amazing wines. He'll tell us where to get those. But, of course, your input is always important. 0427JOY949. Email onair@joy.org.au. You can send a tweet to cravings_joy949, or you can, in fact, ring on the telephone, 1300JOY949. That's 1300 569 949. My name is Pete Dillon. I'm with you here until 2 o'clock. So let's talk about, obviously, MasterChef has happened. You've been elevated to a certain status in people's imagination. Mm-hmm. You say that you're in awe of chefs.
Yeah, I am. I don't call myself a chef, full stop. I'm still the home cook. I think what chefs can do is, you know, like, it's a skill. Like, they took years of training, and being in MasterChef for 3 months on TV, that doesn't make me anywhere close to a chef.
And, no, well, chefs, you know, there's usually 4 years of training and then 10 years of slogging your guts out.
Yeah, so exactly. And I was actually I'm staying at the Crown Promenade, and I met this lovely young apprentice chef, Curtis, 16 years old, and he's just starting out, and it's a perfect time to start.
It is.
And I think you get all that training when you're young, and then you just finish off, and, you know, you could end up like, you know, Josh Emmett or Gordon Ramsay.
You could end up anywhere. I had to give it up. It was just, I think my personality was better suited to front of house than back of house. But I still, I have this skill, and one of the things I love is being able to cook for love.
Yes.
I don't want to do it for money. It's about putting my heart and soul on a plate for the people that I care
exactly.
about.
Exactly. So it's you on a plate, really.
So let's talk about your new venture, which is Cinnamon Pig.
Yeah. So cinnamonpig.com.au, that's a website that I've sort of put recipes on. Mm-hmm. And I've it's also sort of random sort of blogging as well, like, you know, a lot of food news, a lot of recommendations and referrals. I wanted to give little businesses, hole-in-the-wall cafes, you know, like a plug, because they don't get a lot of mention. And it's more about talking about the experience of the food rather than food critiquing.
They also don't have the opportunity to bring a PR machine on board, like the places like Luke Mangan and Pete Evans and those guys.
Exactly. And you know, like, hats off to them. That's fine. That's what they do. But, you know, the small business, they're the food that I identify with.
Mm.
Like, you know, like lovely Malaysian restaurants that you wouldn't think about going in because they've got decor from 1991, you know, leftover Christmas decorations.
1976. I live in an area which is highly populated by just a huge melting pot of culture. There's Vietnamese, there's Malaysian, there's Singaporean, there's Chinese, there's African, there's Turks, there's Middle Easterners, there's all sorts of... So I am so spoiled for choice.
I think it's brilliant. I think that's the melting pot that's Australia.
Well,
I think,
it is.
You know, and Melbourne as well. Like, you get so many different cuisines so easily, and they're all so, you know, delicious. And someone needs to shout this out. So that's what Cinnamon Pig does. It also is a platform for me to test my recipes and my mum's recipes. So occasionally there's some recipe updates, and eventually, fingers crossed, if the right publisher says yes, there'll be a book.
Okay, well, we'll keep our fingers crossed for you as well. How's mum coping with it all? Is she immensely proud?
I think she is. Like, mum and dad are still in Malaysia, so they have no idea how big this show is. They only hear little quips from, you know, people like they know from Melbourne or Sydney.
So they didn't watch online? Or
no, they couldn't. Like, different regions and everything. It's not compatible.
Ah.
So when I speak to mum every now and then, she'll say, oh, how's that cooking thing you're doing? Like, it's hilarious. It's so funny. And my sister, who lives in Perth, she's a completely different, like, she's an introvert, and I'm an extrovert, and she cannot understand why I would put myself out there. She still thinks I'm crazy.
I don't think you're crazy. I think it's a very brave thing to do, because you do all of a sudden, you put your balls on the line.
And you bear your soul on TV as well. You can't run away.
Hi, this is Callum from Channel 10's MasterChef, and you're tuned into Joy 94.9.
How did I do that, Elvin Kwa? Look
it's
at
like
you.
Magic.
I am here with Elvin, and I have my next guest on the phone in Adelaide. Now, I need to put out a bit of a caveat. This man is my business partner's husband. However, he's got a nice story to tell about a new wine venture. Glenn James, welcome back to Cravings.
Yeah, hi, Pete. How's it going?
Good. This is your second visit to this program.
It is.
Let's talk about ducks. It is a new venture. You've just left probably Australia's most well-known beverage or wine company after 8 years of service. What inspired you to create Ducks?
Ducks in a row?
Yes.
Look, it's been a long time coming. Amanda and myself have been, you know, I've been involved with looking at new or unusual little known varieties to make wine out of that are just offering something completely different to the usual Shiraz and Chardonnay and Cabernet and Merlot, etc. And so we're embarking on finding out little patches of Mataro, which is, you know, a great red grape variety that's been in existence in Australia since day one, and but always been in the background and blended away. And also looking at new Italian and Spanish varieties that are new on the scene that just offer so much more, a range of textures and flavours.
So let's talk about this Mataro. This is your first release, the Ducks in a Row Erect Habit Mataro.
Yes.
People have asked me already, as I've spoken about Ducks in a Row, where's the vineyard?
The vineyard is right near the small town of Wollunga in the McLaren Vale wine region.
Now, you buy the grapes, obviously. You buy the fruit and then make the wine yourself?
Yes, indeed.
Not in your shed, I hope.
No, a nice, good, you know, quite an ancient old open fermenter, actually. Yeah.
So what is it that's special about this Mataro?
Well, it's a little tiny patch. We only got 5 barrels worth of vines that are over 60 years old on a little bit of soil that was well sought after in the 1800s for almond growing. So it is a really nice free-draining soil, and the vines are very old, and they're just, you know, producing this wonderfully intense fruit that gives wine with a lot of complexity and depth and blueberry flavours and ripe tannins.
Glenn, I've got a guest here in the studio. You may be familiar with him because I know that you've watched a bit of MasterChef. It is Elvin Kwar, who was top six.
Hi, Glenn.
Hi, Alan. Yes, I think I'm with Amanda, especially with Amanda around, I think we watched every episode.
Hey, I've got a question about your wine. What can you pair it with in terms of food?
Well, it's because it has a really mouth-watering acidity and a tannin length and fineness on the palate that just keeps on going, but not too dry. It's going to go with any sort of rich food you can name, any of the meats.
Wow.
Particularly. Yep.
Venison?
Yes. Yeah,
it's, any game?
Because of the acidity, I think it's going to cut through any level of oiliness or greasiness that it may have.
Yeah. Oh, God, I need a glass now.
Yeah, so do I. It's because it always makes me salivate. So let's talk about the other varieties that we've got coming on board. You're doing a Vermentino and a Fiano?
That's correct, yeah. We've managed to... These are quite new to Australia.
Perhaps we should explain what a Vermentino and a Fiano are, because I think we've just spoken a language that a lot of people don't understand.
I've just vagued out.
Well, Vermentino is a great variety, just like Chardonnay is. But it's... mainly from the island of Sardinia in the Mediterranean, quite a hot, unfertile place, a bit like Australia, and along the coast in Tuscany, producing lovely herbal, and I mean, when I say herbal, not like Sauvignon Blanc, but more scrubby herbs like rosemary and basil and things like that, thyme. And it really suits the heat, producing lovely acidic, aromatic wines that are just really suit our cuisine. And along with that, we have Fiano, which is a variety, very ancient variety that's believed that the ancient Greeks actually brought it to Italy when they were putting colonies there when they first settled Italy. And it's not much of it around in the world. And we've just got some vines in Australia, and that produces quite a full-bodied wine, but also aromatic. It's like opening a or making a pesto. It's like a basil and pine nut type smell.
Wow!
So
you've got Elvin back. He's with you immediately. Glenn, where's your interest in alternative varieties of wine come from?
Well, I've been involved in making wine now in Australia since I graduated from winemaking school in the early 90s, and I've made a lot of Chardonnay and a lot of Shiraz in my time, and being involved in the industry, you see, and drinking a lot of wine from around the world, just really attracted my attention, and being involved in the Alternate Varieties Wine Show, which operates
Out of Mildura, my hometown.
Yeah, and just seeing what other producers are doing, I think they offer just such an exciting future for Australian wine.
So there's another young lady that we've actually had on this program. Her name is Kim Chalmers. Mm. Her family have quite an interest in the alternative varieties as well. Is that where you're getting some of your fruit? Can I ask that question?
Yeah, you can. Kim and I have known each other for a long time, and I've been going to see her dad's vineyard, their first vineyard that started all this, really, in Mildura. They've
in
now
Houston?
Moved to Heathcote now. Mm. But so, yes, I've had access to some of these vines through the Chalmers, yes.
And I understand the little bird told me that you could be off to Spain very shortly to make some wines with
an exciting
young woman.
Yes. Look, it's an opportunity. I mean, I've really locked into Mataro. In Spain, which is one of the homelands of Mataro, it's called Monastrell. And so in southern Spain, there's some very old bush vines, and I just hope to get hold of some and produce yet another Mataro, but from Spain, and bring that back here under our Ducks in a Row label.
Nice. So you've left the confines of one might assume, a well-paid job.
Yes, very safe job, yes.
How tough a decision was that for you to say, you know, I'm willing to take this risk? Because we've been talking about risk with Elvin, sort of packing up his life and trotting off to MasterChef. It's a fairly brave decision. I did say to Elvin, it's putting your balls on the line. You've done the same thing.
Very much so. You can carry on, I think, doing what you're comfortable doing in the safety of a salaried position. Hmm. But look, day after day goes on, and you've got to find reasons to get out of bed in the morning and to really just feel alive.
I completely agree, Glenn.
Yeah, you can talk and talk and talk as much as you like, but just Amanda and I decide to jump in.
Well done.
And I guess, Elvin, this is the same decision that you made with MasterChef, is to put your balls on the line, back yourself.
Yeah, pretty much.
And throw yourself into a crazy television show.
Yeah, exactly.
So how many wines do you think we'll see from the Ducks label over the coming time, Mr. James?
Yeah, so for this spring, and so in a couple of weeks' time, I'll be bottling the 2010 Vermentino and Fiano.
I can't wait.
And, and they're going to be quite limited,
limited release.
Anyway. But already planning 2011 vintage, which really is only a matter of six months away.
That means
too long.
That means Christmas is here in 5 months.
I know. Well, there's actually some vines around already sprouting shoots, so it's always a panic sign.
Is it a panic sign or is it a good sign?
Well, you got to panic in terms of getting yourself organised, I think.
Oh, right.
Yeah. It's all potential, you see.
Right, it is.
So we have those two whites being released, but, following up with the 2011, alongside more of the Fermentino and Fiano, we're going to be making a very exciting variety from which is native to Sicily called Nero Diavola. Very Shiraz-like in some ways, but I think more suited to the heat again, and doesn't get carried away with its alcohol and over-ripeness.
Mm.
So, again, from Heathcote.
I've had a Nero Diavolo. I'm just trying to think whose it was.
There's a few around.
Could it possibly be another Chalmers?
They have just done they've done a couple, I think. Yeah.
That's not what they make a rosé out of, is it? A risotto?
They've got a risotto. One of them is a Nero Diavolo.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Maybe I've drank too much wine. Yeah. Well, sir, if people would like to indeed find a sample of these wines so that they can purchase, I know there is one restaurant here in Melbourne that has or is putting the wine on the list, which would be Donovan's at St Kilda.
St Kilda there, yes. And we're having more restaurants will be taking a wine as well as some retail outlets, but that's still very much a work in progress.
Of course, so it's a young company.
The best thing would be to contact either get to our website, which is ducksinarow.com.au, or email us would be the best thing, which is quack. ducksinarow.com.au, which is pretty easy to remember.
Fabulous. All right, I do have to let you go because it is Saturday afternoon and we are very fast running out of time. Thank you for joining us. We wish you every success with this venture. And that, again, is ducksinarow.com.au, or you can email quack@ducksinarow.com.au. Thank you, Mr. James.
Thank you, and thanks, Alvin, for talking to you.
No worries. Great. See you, Glenn. Yeah.
Okay, bye.
Glenn James from Ducks in a Row, and as I did at the commencement of that discussion, I put a caveat on the fact that Glenn's wife is my business partner. That's not the reason I spoke to him. This is a very exciting young wine company, and I'm a huge supporter of Australian wine companies who are taking risks. So that's the reason for that discussion. I have to now go out and start buying this wine because let me tell you that
sounds good.
The Mataro is amazing. It is just spectacular wine. Mm. Not because there is that association, but it's retailing at about 60 something bucks a bottle.
Oh my goodness.
But it is exceptional. Do you have a favorite wine?
Or
do you not drink
I'm much? Too ashamed. I just don't know my wines very well. I'm just sort of red or white. Mm. I know it's really bad and I'm talking to you.
No, that's all right because I guess one of the experiences you've got ahead of you now is as we've become familiar with you and what you do and what you create, and cinnamonpig.com.au, people can go to the website and find the recipe for the Drunken and Bruised Chicken, which my housemaid made for me the week before last, I think it was, when I was a little bit poorly. And she said, "I'm making Drunken and Bruised." And I went, "Are you serious?" Because she's not somebody who cooks a lot.
Oh, wow.
And she did an exceptional job. She's
fantastic.
Running around Footscray trying to find Shaoxing wine and the Mirin and all of that.
Yeah, that's amazing. There was a nationwide shortage of Mirin after my masterclass. It just goes to show what MasterChef does to you.
It does. Mate, I know you've got to go because you've got another appointment this afternoon, but I'm really, really grateful for you coming in and spending the time with me.
Anytime. Thanks for having me. It's great.
It's been a joy, and I'm sure when you're back in town, I can have you to come in and co-host and we can meet some extraordinary chefs.
They'll be cool. It's a deal.
And same when I'm in Sydney. Just one thing I wanted to mention. A wonderful man who was a great part of the wine industry died back in June after fighting multiple myeloma. And it was only a few weeks shy of his daughter's first birthday. His name was Mark Johnson, a terrific bloke. And to pay tribute to Mark and to raise money for his daughter, Emily, a dinner's being held at Jacques Raymond, which was one of his favourite restaurants. This is probably a blatant plug, but it's all for a good cause. The event's instigated by the gang at Cellar and Store in Heathcote, where he worked, and supported by Jasper Hill, a winery that was one of his favourites. All wines have been donated, including the 09 Emily's Paddock, obviously named for his daughter as well, before it's released. There'll be silent bids on the night. Dinner for Emily is on Thursday, the 19th of August. Obviously, this is a fundraiser to raise some money for Mark's daughter. I'm Pete Dillon. I have been joined by Elvin Kwa. Thank you, Elvin, for coming in. He's had to rush off. And, of course, it's time for me to really go and open a glass of wine. So thank you for your company. I look forward to joining you next week. Until then, bon chance.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.